hosting today with OSU cotton specialist Seth Bird. Well, what do you think about the cotton right now? What are you hearing around your neck of the woods?
Yeah, there's a lot of, uncertainty. You know, we've had some good prices, but there's a lot of good prices on a lot of other commodities. The moisture we've received, you know, recently, and it's been up and down, you know, it hasn't been uniform everywhere, but some folks who hadn't been getting much moisture at all have gotten some now. That always makes us a little more optimistic. So, yeah, I mean, I think we're probably going to be close to where we thought we were going to be, you know, months ago, right around the half million mark as far as acreage. But there's been a lot of uncertainty, I guess, you know, with the markets and weather.
Do you think that the acres, you know, that we've heard on the latest acres are comparable for other states like they are in Oklahoma right now?
Yeah, you know, I'm so centered in Oklahoma, and then, you know, I guess a little bit with Kansas just because my connection with some folks up there. But I think, you know, the general trend for most states when we looked at those surveys was down, and Oklahoma was right there. You know, Oklahoma also was going to be a tick down from where we, you know, normally would be. As far as the reasons go, you know, I think other states have a lot more options than we do. I mean, we're lucky we can, you know, we can potentially plant beans or, you know, maybe a little corn in some of our cotton acres. Not, you know, a lot of our cotton acres are probably going to be cotton or maybe nothing. So I think the reasons around the change kind of varies. And a lot of that has to do, to me, with the crop options those folks have in those other states.
With the cotton prices you mentioned being a little bit higher right now, do you think that's going to inspire more acres?
My gut feeling would be if we saw a big change between now and May, it would be because of, it would have to be not only due to our prices remaining, you know, somewhat high. And anytime they're above 80, I think now we consider them kind of high compared to what we've had the last several years. But I think it had to be, you know, that plus something else happening, you know, another commodity price falling, some other, factor would have to influence a big change at this point. I think we're probably, you know, I think things are going to probably remain pretty stable. And of course, as soon as I say that, something's going to happen. But I would say I don't see something occurring that would make a big shift, you know, in acreage happen.
What are some key planting decisions ahead of getting started?
Yeah, so, you know, hopefully by now you've probably got your variety selection figured out. We've had several meetings recently, and one of the things that we've been talking about this year is doing a little bit more homework into exactly the seed you have. So, you know, you're going to buy variety A, but the way cotton works, and it's probably the way with other crops, I don't know, but, you know, I know cotton well enough that you're going to have several different lot numbers or sources or farms that grew the seed cotton that is now the seed that's in your bag. And so that's going to have different characteristics depending on, you know, where the seed was grown. So we've encouraged folks to do a little more homework on their cotton seed, look into their germination values. So you have to contact your seed representative from each, you know, company that you get your seed from to get the actual germination values for that seed lot. And that really helps with placement. So if you've got a seed that's got, you know, high 90s or mid 90s warm germ, really high quality seed, maybe the cool germ values are really high, you can place that seed in more challenging conditions. Maybe, you know, go out earlier with that. And then maybe something that's a little lower, you know, maybe into the, you know, 80s, still good seed, you know, but maybe not as high quality as the other. You can save that for maybe when conditions improve, or use those values to adjust seeding rates. So that's sort of the big thing we've been talking about. Outside of that, you know, obviously having pest control down, you know, having residual herbicides down going into planting. So we're in late March now, moving into April. This is kind of a sort of the end of the window for putting out yellow herbicides. So if you've done that, great. If you haven't, you've still got a little time. But then have a game plan going forward that, you know, once the planters, you know, pass the field, what's your next step? What's your next pass? You know, what's your follow-up to planting?
How important is it, would you say, for producers to pick those varieties? Because I'm guessing, like, if you live in a certain area of the state, like if you're in the Panhandle, you might pick a different variety than someone lives, like, in the southwest portion of the state.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, it's very important. It's probably, you know, decisions we make surrounding planting variety selection, planner setup, all that stuff. They're probably the most important decisions we make. And variety selection is a huge factor. If you look at our variety trials, they kind of reflect that there's a lot of variability out there in variety performance. But that's the one decision that you can't take back. Once you've planted it, you know, you can't change the variety. You can't say, oh man, you know, the environment threw something at me that I didn't see coming. I wish I had it going with a different variety. You got to make sure you're setting yourself up to address, you know, challenges that you could foresee facing. So yeah, you know, maturity is a big one. If we move further north in Oklahoma, we can go to, from a you know, a mid maturity environment in the Southwest. I hate to say that they're a long season, because it's not a long season, but it's a longer season for the Southwest. Then as we move into other parts of Oklahoma, you know, as we move north, that season length, you know, drastically declines. And so maturity becomes a much higher factor. And so we typically would switch to early mature variety. But the flip side of that is, with Oklahoma, as you move north, you tend to get into more non-irrigated cotton, and super early mature varieties tend to not do as well non-irrigated, because just of their response to drought stress or to heat stress is a little bit less elastic than you see with a later mature variety. And so it does make that decision a very important, because we're in an early but short season environment, which would normally favor early mature varieties, but we're in dry land conditions, which will normally favor a more later maturing variety. So we got to kind of find that, you know, sort of happy medium between those two characteristics of our varieties.
Well, and I'm guessing people that plant in Oklahoma may plant something different in Kansas, may plant something different in Texas, because as we know, weather is always all over the place in all three of those places.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's the weather that drives a lot of it. The season length drives a lot of it. And then, you know, it's kind of funny too, just to see the differences in a very short distance between crop performance, just due to elevation. You know, just elevation on its own in our area can change as you move, you know, east to west and even south to north, and that can make a huge difference in, you know, the environment and how these varieties respond. So that's why we always say, you know, if you're looking for variety data, if you're looking to try to make a decision, and you didn't do a variety trial on your farm, which is 99.9% of producers don't have variety trials probably, make sure you're looking at data that's not only geographically close to you, but also under management conditions that are close to yours. So if you're a dryland producer, look at dryland trials near your area. You know, the irrigated trials aren't going to show you as much data. So yeah, it can be a lot of little, I guess we could call them micro environments in our region that can really have a big impact on variety performance and then what we should plant and when we should plant it.
Well, and I'm guessing if you're someone that has access to irrigation, you're going to want to choose a variety that goes with irrigation. Whereas if you're somebody that you're not going to be doing that, you need to pick something that's a little bit more drought resistant.
Yeah, cotton's kind of a funny creature. I mean, you know, there's really a big difference between these varieties and how they respond. You know, you'll take a variety that does really good in dryland and non-irrigated conditions. And, you know, that's got to be, there's certain characteristics that lend itself to really being successful dryland. And you'll take that variety and you'll put it in an irrigated trial and it'll just fall flat on its face. It's kind of funny. And sometimes it's the opposite too. You know, it'll look really good irrigated and not as good dryland. So there is some things that lend themselves to a variety's success in certain management systems. And there are varieties, I'll say there are some varieties out there, and it's rare, but we'll have, you know, a couple usually around that are pretty stable. They may never, you know, just blow you away with a performance, but they'll always finish, you know, pretty high no matter where you put them within a certain environment. You know, it can be irrigated or dry land, but within a certain environment, they'll be pretty strong. And you know, a lot of that information is what we sort of try to emphasize in our variety report, which, you know, that is out now. It's online. You know, folks can access it. And that's, you know, we really try to hammer home, you know, looking at variety stability across environments, because you probably don't have a variety trial on your farm. So you're trying to take data from somewhere else and fit it to your, you know, production system.
What's the attitude that you're hearing from cotton farmers right now? This is always a loaded question, isn't it?
I love cotton farmers because of their attitude, I guess. So yeah, that doesn't necessarily mean it's a good one. No, they're great. I mean, you got to be, you know, cotton's just, it's just such a unique crop, I guess. That's the only crop I know. So, you just always have to prepare. You got to be optimistic. You know, we all try to be optimistic, but it's almost like in the back of your mind, you're just preparing for the worst. So you're not completely caught off guard when it does happen. I will say, I think the prices of the crop have helped, you know, anytime it's above 80, that always helps. Obviously, prices of everything else aren't helping. So all of our inputs right now are high. You know, fertilizer prices are high. We're worried about supply of certain chemicals, of certain crop protection products. So, you know, at the end of the day, you've got to make all this budget out and pencil out. And so I guess I'll say that as normal, we're cautiously optimistic, but, you know, we're also very realistic about the challenges we could face in the next year.
Well, you bring up a really good point, because cotton is a hard crop. And why do you think that farmers just keep sticking with it year after year? Because, you know, sometimes in Oklahoma, the weather can make or break any crop, but it's really hard on cotton.
Yes. I mean, I guess maybe cotton lends itself to stubborn people, and I'm super stubborn. So maybe I'm just saying that for me. I think our growers, there's a passion behind it. You know, I think, you know, cotton has kind of, you know, popped up in places in Oklahoma, and it's popped up in places in other parts of the cotton belt, and folks don't really hang with it. I mean, it's tough. I mean, you know, it's not something that's always going to reward you every year. But I think what happens is you get that one or two good years, and it's just like, you know, you just get hooked on it. I don't know how to describe it. Again, I've never worked with another crop, you know, as intently. I guess I've been around other crops and kind of, you know, dabbled in other things, but nothing like cotton, nothing as intently as cotton. And I think that's why it usually does kind of sit off by itself, because it is kind of its own beast. And maybe it just takes a certain personality, and who knows if that's a good one or a bad one, to sort of stick with it. But I think you've got to have a little bit of stubbornness. I think most cotton growers are super modest. Most folks in the cotton community are really modest, because this crop will humble you, you know, usually before it rewards you. And I think a lot of us have been through way more humbling experiences with cotton, and we get those few rewarding ones, and that's what keeps us hooked. But I guess it's just so much dang fun. You know, that's why we keep doing it. That's why the growers keep doing it.
Well, and it's also super important. I mean, cotton is a big deal. We need cotton every day in our lives. And I think some people may forget how we get the cotton.
I see a lot of folks that will come out to a cotton field and it'll be the white flowers, and they think that's the cotton, or, you know, they don't understand the process between going from a field and the ginning process and the spinning process and how complex it is. You're right. I mean, you know, it's a vital crop. It's, you know, the primary natural fiber that we use for any industry that uses fibers. So it is very important. And I think it's a lot of folks that are in the industry have a lot of pride in being involved in cotton. I'm very proud to be, you know, on the, at least a tiny cog in the wheel, you know, to try to help folks, you know, with whatever we can. It's a great crop to work with. It's a great community to be involved in. And it's a very important crop to Oklahoma. It's a very important crop to the U.S.
Well, Seth, that's why we like talking to you, because we know you're going to be passionate about it, and we appreciate it.
And I'm super
that.
Stubborn.
Aren't we all at some point? Thanks so much for visiting
Thank
with us
you.
Today.